Good morning, Arizona homeowners. Why don't you walk with me here around the yard as we're in the 8 o'clock hour, the outdoor living hour. It's the third Saturday of the month, so we'll be talking urban farming. I'll see where I can't find Mr. Greg Peterson, Gary D., legendary radio broadcasters behind the board, taking care of all the engineering. Jennifer's on the phones at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also text questions to 411-923 or send an email if you need help with plant or insect identification to info@rosieonthehouse.com. And you're not Greg Peterson.
No, I'm not.
Miss Kari Spencer, welcome.
Thank you, Romy.
What brings you down here with us?
Well, Greg is taking a much-deserved break today, and so I am going to do my best to fill his shoes today and talk about edible landscaping.
We're not talking goats. I saw you. I just assumed we must be talking. It must be goat week.
Goats or chickens. Actually, today we're going to be talking plants.
Okay, wonderful.
And gardening.
Edible landscape. Wonderful. Well, it is the time of the year to plant.
It certainly is. Yes.
And the weather outside right now is just beautiful in the mornings. That's my favorite time, I think, of the year, is going into the fall season after the long, hot summers and just feeling that coolness in the air. You've just got that buildup that it's coming.
Yes, it's so refreshing. It's like spring fever, only we get it in September.
That's right.
Yeah.
The reverse effect for desert dwellers.
That's right.
So where do we start when we're talking edibles?
Well, when we're talking edible landscaping today, so we're talking about, you know, creating a landscape that's not just pretty, but also that you can eat from. So you can go out in your yard and get something every day of the year in Phoenix and eat right out of your yard, which is a pretty amazing thing to do. And, you know, if you're going to spend the time to grow something, to take care of it, to water it, why not get something to eat out of it?
And one of Greg's big visions was for Arizona to be able to feed itself. If the supply truck stopped, there's, 3 days of food. So his vision has always been to become a more sustainable desert inhabitants by growing our own food in our own yard. And he he has said before the amount of plants, but he's on a third of an acre?
He is on a third of an acre. And if you ever get a chance to go on a tour of the urban farm, it is spectacular. You wouldn't believe the amount of food that comes out of a third of an acre. That's pretty much a regular, maybe a little bit larger than most city lots, but not a whole lot.
But bigger. You don't need acres.
You do not need acres. Absolutely. If you live in an apartment, you can grow something to eat. Yeah, and a lot of people really want to eat local food, and they want to know how their food is produced. Well, the best way to do that, the most local, and the most control you can possibly have over your food is something you grow yourself.
So where do we start with the observation? You had mentioned apartments. Obviously, if you're on the north, south, east, or west, is going to affect what you're going to be able to grow on your apartment balcony or in your window garden, but it all starts with that observation.
It does start with observation. You know, if you move to a new city, a lot of times what people will do is they'll rent an apartment for a little while, and they look around the city, they get to know it, and then eventually they will buy a house, right? So when you move into a new home and you're thinking about where to start your garden, it's kind of the same mentality. You want to get to know your property, see what you've got. Maybe you can rent a little space, grow some things in containers, and we'll talk about some easy ways to get started growing later on in the program. But first things first, let's just get to know the property. Look around, see what we have, see where the sun is falling on the property. You know, vegetables need 6 to 8 hours a day of sun.
If you're mapping that today, it's going to be different next month.
That's right.
It's going to be different next month. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different the following month. So you've got to take into account where we are in the season and where the sun's going to be at mm-hmm. the time you need those vegetables.
That's right. So that means observing your yard for an extended period of time throughout several seasons to see where that sun is. Because, you know, through the summer, my backyard, which is on the north side of my house, gets sun. But I suspect that in the winter, it's not going to get much sun at all because it'll be shaded by my house.
Mm-hmm.
So take that into account. Go out and look where your sunny areas are, where your shady areas are. Look at your microclimates. Now, that's a big word that just means different areas of your yard that may differ from the regular surrounding Phoenix climate. So if you have an area that has a bunch of trees, it might be a little bit cooler and shadier in that area than in a south-facing front yard that's filled with rock. So you want to go and just check and see, what do you have?
And you had mentioned your yard, and it's on the north side. And in the winter, a lot of it's going to be shaded by the home's shadow. Do you have a block wall in the back?
I do.
So against that block wall might be a good spot for vegetables in the fall. But in the summertime, anything you put in there is going to fry against the block wall. That microclimate that block wall creates and radiates that heat is going to bake anything you try and put in there.
That's right. And you make a good point.
Except cat's claw.
Except cat's claw. Yeah, that'll grow anywhere. But you're making a good point that when we're looking at different areas in our yard and trying to decide where to grow, it's not that there's like some good areas and some bad areas. You want to just look and see what you have and how to make it work. Like if you have a really hot block wall, not great in the summertime, but might be perfect in the wintertime to keep things a little bit warmer and to grow longer, right? So going out, spend time, maybe take a notebook outside and write some things down. We're looking for sun. We're looking for shady spots and sunny spots. We're looking for water. Where's the water on your property? Do you have spigots? Do you have areas where water pools? Do you have downspouts? Okay, gardens in Phoenix need water. We don't get enough rain here just to let them grow naturally with whatever rainwater we get. So water is very important. So we'll need to look for that. And look for things like, where do your pets like to hang out in the yard?
That's not the place you want to start tilling.
It is not. I made that mistake at our first farm. I planted a whole bunch of beautiful flowers and some vegetables along a wall at the back of my property and came out and it was just completely destroyed because my dog had run straight through it. And then I started looking and seeing that my dog ran back and forth patrolling that wall all day long and I had planted right in his path. So those are some things that you want to notice, because what our goal is to find a spot that will be great for the vegetables, that gets enough sun and that has access to water, but also that makes things easier for us. So if there's challenges in an area that we're going to have to overcome, that doesn't mean you can't grow there. It just means you need to recognize the challenges, like the dog running through. If I really wanted to grow on that wall, I would need to put a barrier up and train the dog to run somewhere else, right?
And a dog barrier is a lot different than a bird barrier, because every garden eventually is going to have to get some kind of bird barrier unless you're just sitting out there 24/7 with a blowhorn and a shotgun.
Right, yes. Yeah, there's wildlife. There's things we really can't control that are going to be coming into our yard. So take that time to look and see what is there before you just go and till up the yard and put a big garden in a spot and then realize, this area is not getting enough sun, or this area is my dog's running through it, those kinds of things.
And it's not only your yard, but your neighbor's yard. What kind of trees do they have? Mm-hmm. Trees bring birds. Trees bring shade. There's a lot of good things there, but it may not be the best place for that tree shadow or power lines. And is there an alley in the back way? There's a lot of factors that really go into just more than what's on your property. What's surrounding your property can have an effect as well.
Absolutely. Many factors like that. Does your neighbor spray for weeds? You might get some overspray in your garden if you put it right next to the property line. Okay. Does your neighbor have a grapefruit tree? Maybe you don't want to plant a grapefruit tree. Maybe you want to go talk to that neighbor and say, hey, if I plant an apple tree,
can we trade?
Can we trade? Those kinds of things. I'm also looking to see what's growing really well in your neighbor's yard. maybe it would grow well in your yard too, since you live in basically the same area and the same climate. So yes, definitely paying attention to what is in your neighborhood is really important.
And finally, soil.
Soil. We could talk for 3 days about soil, right? But soil is really important. And, you know, I am all about putting in front yard gardens. And my front yard at my old house and even at my new house here is just covered in rock, right? So in order to put a garden in my front yard, I'm going to need to rake back that rock. And I'm going to need to start to amend that soil, because I suspect that underneath that rock is just a bunch of really hard gray dirt.
Right? Not a lot of room for the roots to grow and develop. Even watered, it's not going to provide the type of soil condition that's going to give you an edible landscape.
Right. So to grow,
unless you like weed salad.
Correct. So to grow there, I'm going to need to do quite a lot of work to get that soil to where it will grow something. Now, in my backyard, there is some edge around the wall where there's landscape plants growing, and they're growing really nicely. So I suspect that the soil in that area is probably pretty good. Maybe I could take out some of the oleander, put in some pomegranate trees, you know, just switch something. Because I think the soil there will work.
We'll continue our conversation on edible landscapes here on the other side of the break. It's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. Text is 411-923 or email at info@rosieonthehouse.com. In the Outdoor Living Hour, talking edible landscape with Kari Spencer. Is the new place called the Micro Project as well, or you named the new place something else?
We're going to go with the same name, the Micro Farm Project.
All right, Kari Spencer, the Micro Farm Project. More after this. It's a nice little strum you got there going, Gary. Before moving on our talking points, an interesting text in wants to know, is it better to go greenhouse and surprise or just use shade cloth? What greenhouses isn't something we've talked a lot about. What is your opinion?
Well, there are some farms that use greenhouses in Arizona, but for the most part, greenhouses are used for cold weather growing, and we don't get extremely low temperatures. We get a frost once in a while, right? So our main challenge is the sun. And in a greenhouse, heat can actually build up inside a greenhouse. And they're very expensive also. So if you're a commercial grower, a greenhouse might be helpful. But if you're a backyard grower, I would go with the shade cloth. It's a lot less expensive, and it will do the job for you if you're looking for getting cooler temperatures to grow growing in the summer.
And do you have a preference on shade cloth?
I like to go with a 30 to 50% shade cloth. They do make like 90% shade cloth. Those are for humans. But plants need sun in order to produce vegetables. So we don't want to block out all of the sun. We just want to give them a little bit of an edge and bring the temperature down slightly so that they can get through the really hot temperatures in the summer.
All right, so we've talked through our observation. We've identified a place we're going to plant. Now let's talk about that placement. And we're starting off with the four different exposures of the solar aspect.
Yeah, the solar aspect, that's just how the sun shines on your property. And there are four main exposures, north, south, east, west, right? North exposures, as we mentioned before, tend to be the shadiest locations.
And with the exception of the homes up against the mountain, Arizona's designed on a pretty north, south, east, west grid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And on regular size home properties in Arizona, your house is probably going to shade a pretty good portion of your northern exposure, especially in the winter time. Now, that doesn't mean you can't grow there. There might be some greens and winter vegetables that won't mind that shade. But for the most part, if you want to grow a tomato or a squash or a watermelon, those things need quite a lot of sun. Okay? So things that need a lot of sun, we would want to put either on an east exposure to get that nice morning sun, or on a southern exposure where they're going to get sun all day long. The great thing about an east facing exposure is that the plants can get the morning sun, which is gentler on the plants than the afternoon sun. And then, you know, by the time that the temperatures are really, really rising in the summertime and getting so hot around 3-4 in the afternoon, hopefully on an east exposure, they're starting to get a little bit of shade from the house or other structures on the property.
And you'd mentioned watermelons, so space comes into factor if you're doing vines.
Yes. Yeah, you want to think about the size that the plant is going to be when it matures, because even a tomato plant can get as big as a shrub, right? So, yeah, think about the space that you have and where you want to place things in your landscape. Now, a west exposure is the only exposure that I would discourage people from really trying to grow on, because in the summertime, on the west side of your house, that's going to be the hottest spot in the yard, most likely. And plants can really struggle in that area. Now, if all you have is a west exposure, then you can grow there and you can get around it. Use some of that shade cloth that we mentioned to help your plants get through. But that does tend to be the hottest spot on
the
property.
That goes back to the microclimates. May even be a great application for putting some kind of green wall, putting a trellis in front of the wall, growing a nice vine on it to create that buffer from the heat radiating back from the house, mm-hmm. then plant in front of that, and then the shade cloth on top of that. It's doable. It just takes a lot more.
Right. It's just a little more challenging. If you recognize what you have, and then you can figure out ways around it. Like you mentioned, growing a green trellis, or maybe put some trees on the west side of your garden so that in the afternoon those trees start to shade and cool the garden as well.
It's a whole system. It's not just, here's my garden, plant my seed, and water. It's everything around that yard.
Yeah, everything can work together to benefit each other. So definitely we want to be thinking about that.
And starting slow is the hardest thing to do, because mm-hmm. it becomes such an addiction and a drive, and while I'm doing this, I can add this, and while I'm doing this, I can add this, and then suddenly you've overwhelmed yourself, and it all just it becomes so much that you can't take care of anything, and it all starts to go down south.
Guilty as charged. Yes, that actually happened to me at my previous property. I just started going crazy, putting all kinds of gardens and even bringing livestock and different aspects onto the farm without actually spending time in that observation phase and thinking things through carefully and thinking how things could fit together.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. We're in the Outdoor Living Hour with Kari Spencer of The Micro Project talking edible landscapes. We're going to dive a little deeper into the soil. John Eisenhower has a saying, as go the roots, so go the shoots, and that applies to all things planted, not just trees.
That's the truth. That's the truth. So we're going to be talking about soil, and, you know, this is so important, soil, because, you know, if you're going to have a healthy garden and you don't want to spend a lot of time dealing with problems that come up in the garden, then focus on building some healthy soil, because the healthier the soil, the healthier your plants be, and the more you'll get out of it, and the less you'll actually have to work and deal with problems in the garden. All right, so.
And Greg's got it broken down to 5 components here of soil building.
Well, this is what makes healthy soil.
Okay.
Okay. The first thing that we need is some dirt.
We have that.
We got dirt. Yeah. We got.
If you
dirt.
Have a home, you have dirt.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
That's the mineral content of soil. And, yeah, if you've got a home, you've got some dirt. The next thing that we need is organic matter. These are things that were once alive and now are dead and are starting to break down. And we don't have a lot of that in our Arizona dirt, because we don't have a lot of trees that drop leaves, leaving leaf litter that breaks down. We just don't have a lot of plants that drop their leaves and create organic matter in the soil. So we have to add organic matter.
A lot of evergreens in the desert, even though it might not be the type of green you think of when you think of forest or green, but...
Right, right. So we do have some trees, and those are good, but...
And the ones we do, the mesquites, the Palo Verdes, when they do their leaf drop or their flower drops, they're mm-hmm. also tiny. They just blow away. They're not these big, mulberry or maple type leaves that will build up. Those little tiny petals just kind of blow away.
That's right. Yeah, they just disintegrate, I guess. Okay, so we've got the dirt. We've got organic matter. We need some water in healthy soil, and we need some air spaces in healthy soil. You know, when I first was learning about soil, I didn't think about air. You got to have air in soil. So, when you've got earthworms crawling through soil, they're creating tunnels that let air down into the soil. And roots need some oxygen. When roots grow and then the plant dies and the roots decay, that also creates channels and tunnels in the soil as bugs and animals crawl through. So healthy soil, it needs to have air. It can't be so compact and tight like cement that plant roots can't grow.
And I know Greg doesn't pull weeds anymore for that. He will just cut the weed, use that weed as part of composting or feed to his chickens so that the roots and the soil from the weed do that, decay and create those air pockets.
Right.
And I tried to adapt that. I will tell you, if you were going to do that, it's not a good practice if you're on a larger lot than a third of an acre.
It takes a lot of effort and work, for sure, to do that.
That works in small spaces. That doesn't work on large spaces.
Right. So we've got dirt, we've got organic matter, we have soil and water, and then the final component is probably the most important component. And those are all the living things in the soil. Some of them we can see, like earthworms and ants and different types of bugs. And some of them are completely invisible. These are soil microbes, bacteria, some fungi. Some are visible, some are invisible. And actually, these are probably the most important component because they're kind of the middlemen of a garden. So when you go out and you take your organic fertilizer and you put it on the garden, the plants can't actually use that fertilizer as it is. They need those soil microbes to break it down for them first. And then the plants can actually use the nutrients in the fertilizer. So if you don't have bacteria and fungi and all the other microorganisms, your plants can't eat, right? So we want to definitely promote a lot of life in our soils. And we do that by adding the water and the organic matter that attracts them. Okay, so when you add organic matter like leaves or compost or anything that was once alive, those microbes attack it. They eat it. They break it down. And then the plants can use what's left over as nutrient.
And I've never heard it put that way. The
microorganisms.
Microorganisms.
Yep, they're the middlemen.
Okay. And that's interesting on fertilizer. Do you have a preference between granular or liquid, or it doesn't matter? The microorganisms need to break it down either way?
Either way, they will break it down. Now, you can do a foliar spray with some liquids where you spray it right on the leaves and the plants will uptake it. But that's just certain kinds of fertilizers that you can do that with. But if you're using a granular or a liquid and putting it on the soil, the microbes will break it down either way. Now, I prefer an organic source of fertilizer because it is gentler on the microbes. They like it better, and they will make better use of it than a chemical fertilizer. But either way, they will break the nutrients down into forms that the plants can uptake.
Interesting. And when you're talking about organics, how often are you applying these fertilizers? Everything's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Each plant's a little different, but there's an old way we used to always follow citrus, for example, on our edibles, is 3 times a year, and a lot of people are fertilize more often, but do a lot less than we used to do on those three times of the year where we would apply a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as a beginning gardener, I would just follow the old school rules.
Start slow.
Don't over-fertilize because you can do damage by putting more. Follow the directions on the package, for starters. And then, you know, call your master gardeners and ask them, hey, I've got an apple tree. What should I do to, how should I fertilize that apple tree? And, but basically, yeah, for trees, we do three times in the spring. Memorial Day, Valentine's Day, and Easter.
Labor Day.
Well, you can fertilize on Labor Day as well in the fall, but I wouldn't do that with citrus necessarily. But for your stone fruits, yeah, you could fertilize in the fall as well if you wanted to. But, you know, there's just so many ways of doing things, and every gardener is going to tell you something different. So I would go out and start small and practice and experiment. If you make a mistake, that's okay, because we all do when we're learning to grow. And just see what works for you on your property. And, you know, there are some really easy strategies that you can start with, like composting. Composting is a great way to build organic matter right on your property for your garden. It's cheap, it's easy, and you can do it really quite easily just with scraps from your kitchen and maybe shredding your junk mail. Have you ever tried a lasagna garden, Romy?
No, ma'am.
Now, that's not growing things that you would put into a lasagna, like tomatoes and and basil and things like that. It's a lasagna gardening is a technique of composting in place. So let's say you have a
So instead of having to have this composting bin where you then have to move it again to your gardening, you just compost in place.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, so you could build a small raised bed garden. Okay? And then just start throwing your garden scraps in there, start throwing your kitchen scraps from your salads in there. Shred some paper, throw it in there, mix it up, keep it about as moist as a wrung-out sponge, and you can create compost right in the place where you're going to grow the food.
How long does that take to build up that soil enough to be able to then start with our seeds or our starter plants?
Okay. It depends. It depends. How much garden and yard waste, how much junk mail are you throwing in there? Because you have to build up some mass. Right? Secondly, how often are you going out there and making sure that it's as moist as a wrung-out sponge? Because if it dries out, it's going to stop decomposing. It's going to stop breaking down. It's going to stop composting. Right? So if you go out and you get it wet and you take a pitchfork and you kind of stir it up a little bit, you could have nice soil in a matter of months. Another technique that people do is they build some layers. They put some yard and garden scraps and a layer of junk, shredded newspaper, another layer of yard and garden scraps, another layer of shredded newspaper, and then they cover it with a layer of composted soil. They start growing in it right away. So they've got 6 or 8 inches of composted soil that they can grow in while that stuff down below is breaking down.
I mean, you're talking newspaper and you're talking junk mail. Is there anything I need to look out for, like extra glossy paper you don't put out there? Is it all fine?
Well, it will all break down, but some things are better than others. On my farm, I do avoid the glossy paper. I avoid things that appear to have been laser printed, and that's usually a glossy finish because there may be some toxicity in that ink. But, you know, if you're going with black and white newspaper, there's not really an issue there. You can do that. Or if you have junk mail that's just black and white or it's a matte finish, shred that up. Go ahead and put it in your garden.
So are you shredding your newspaper? Or once that gets wet, that breaks down pretty easily.
Right. I don't shred newspaper. I will kind of tear it up a little bit and put it in there. But I definitely don't spend the time to shred newspaper. But pieces of paper that are 8.5 by 11 that are easy to shred those, because then they will break down much more quickly for you.
And that's a great way for identity. I mean, even though it's shredded, a lot of times that's still they talk about the identity theft, and a lot of times they are just dumpster divers, and they're people that have time to sit there and piece it all together. So it's once you have it shredded and it's in your guard, you're going to notice someone digging through that.
Yeah, and once it gets wet and it starts composting, yeah, no, it's going to grow food, and it's not going to be, your identity is not going to be stolen from that for sure.
Well, coming up, there's a fruit tree program, and we talk about that on the back side of the break, along with wrapping up the final talking points for edible landscaping, getting your own started here as we go into the best growing season for anyone under about the 3,500-foot elevation. It's Rosie on the House every Saturday morning. I can do that. Sounds good. I like that. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation talking edible landscapes. And we've got container guards we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about raised beds. But fruit trees. Fruit trees are one of my favorites. I planted an orchard about 5 years ago, and we're just coming into the first year where I think we're going to get an explosion of citrus, and it's a great time to plant, and there's a great program coming up, the Fruit Tree Extravaganza with four speakers, Jake Mace, Emily Rockley, Rafael De Grande, I don't know Rafael, and of course, Greg Peterson, who's on the line right now to tell us a little bit more about it. I thought you were on vacation. I thought you were under strict orders to disconnect, Greg.
Oh, so, yeah, something like that. How are you?
You just couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it well. Yeah, you guys are rocking it. You guys are absolutely rocking it. Thanks.
So it's coming up. It's September 2nd. Is that next weekend or 2 weekends?
That is a week from today, and we're going to be at North Phoenix Baptist Church for like 5 hours, starting at 8:30 a.m. It is a free half-a-day event. And Emily is coming up from Tucson, and she's going to talk in depth about how to make healthy soil. Jake Mace will be talking about how he transformed his backyard into a edible jungle with wood chips. Rafael De Grenade, she's coming down from Prescott, and she's going to talk about how to build your own food forest. So how do you start with nurse trees up on top all the way down to the, you know, your groceries down at the bottom. And then I'm going to talk about how to pick the right tree for your yard. What trees do really well here and, you know, how to make them thrive. So I'm really excited about it. This is our 18th year that we've been doing this education program.
Wow. 18th year. Free event next Saturday, September 2nd, 8:30 to 1.
Yep.
Do I need to sign up or can I just show up?
You can just show up. We're at 5757 North Central at the North Phoenix Baptist Church. However, it would be great if you could go to urbanfarm.org. And on the front page, it says, click here to register for our fruit tree extravaganza event Saturday, September 2nd. That way we can know you're coming and know how many people to plan for. Currently, we have about 400 people signed up for the event.
Now, as I say, North Phoenix Baptist is a pretty big church, but 400, what is that? Is that half the auditorium already filled?
Oh, no. Actually,
is it bigger than that?
Yeah, we could put about 1,500 people in the room. So I'm planning for 500. So.
Okay. Well, that's and it always does help, like you say, when you're planning an event to know how many you're planning for.
Exactly. And then we'll have special offers. First of all, we've got some cherry trees. The cherry trees are really, really hard here. And we've got some new cherry trees. This is an experimental cherry tree. The only way you can get one of these is to come next Saturday and win it. I'll be giving away some of those. We also have some special offers on, if you spend $100, you'll get some compost. If you spend $300, we get you fertilizer and all kinds of stuff. So the education's free, and then people can, pre-purchase their fruit trees that'll arrive in January.
Wonderful. Well, urbanfarm.com and sign up for the fruit tree program.
Urbanfarm.org.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to it. And one of these times, you're going to have to do them on a non-Saturday for me.
Yeah, I know.
start at 11.
The Great American Seed Up, and Kari can tell you all about that. The Great American Seed Up coming up the 22nd and 23rd of September. We took your advice and we made it for Friday evening and Saturday, so you can come.
Perfect. Well, we'll cover the Great American Sea Dip. Greg, enjoy your Saturday morning, and thanks for thanks for coming in. We'll look forward to the fruit treats
next Saturday.
Extravaganza next Saturday. We'll mention it again and put it in our newsletter as a reminder. Four great speakers, including yours truly, Jeff, Greg Peterson. Thank you, sir.
Perfect. Thank you, thank you. Good job, Kari.
Thanks, Greg.
And that Great American Sea Dip is same place.
Same place, the
North
September,
Phoenix Baptist Church.
Yep, September 22nd, 23rd. On the 22nd, we're going to be showing Seed, the Untold Story. And you can also come and pick up seeds at bulk pricing.
And what type of seeds? I mean, every type of seed.
All kinds of vegetable seeds. We've got pollinator seeds, more than 70 different varieties of seed that you can pick up at the event. Saturday, we're going to have seed education classes. I'll be one of the teachers, and Bill McDorman will be another teacher there. So you can get seed education, and you can pick up your bulk seeds on that day, too. So if you want to get tickets for that, go to greatamericanseedup.com.
The fruit tree program on the 2nd is free. The Great American Seed Up is $7.
It is, but Friday night, if you use the secret code, seed date, all one word, if you purchase two tickets, you're actually going to get one of them for free.
Okay, wonderful. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple great events coming up. Both of those are also posted at rosieonthehouse.com with links over to the Urban Farm so you can register. Two easy ways to find it and remember. Urban Farm's pretty easy to remember, but We threw it on our website just to give it one more place that people can have information to access. Great programs and a great way to get educated. And it even with the education, start small. There's a lot of things you learn once you start going into the growing process that just continues to build upon itself. So, Kari Spencer of the Micro Project, we appreciate you coming down and joining us this Saturday morning.
All right. Thank you for having me.
And they can see you again speak at the Great American Seed Up, September 22nd and 23rd.